Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I know that you don't necessarily, you can't have the conversation with people who do NILs or have that contact, but would you like to see the collective that this
I would like to find unified rules across this country to put things in place. What? That's what I want. And I don't know what those are. I'm not smart enough to figure it out. I don't know what the antitrust laws, all those bylaws, so the government needs to step in because this is these things here. And what's funny, in that talk, right before he said that about us, wasn't he soliciting funds from the crowd? It's amazing, wasn't it?
The left, Rob.
When you walk on water, I guess, don't matter.
When you walk on water, says Jimbo Fisher, guess it don't matter. Nick Saban said this isn't what NIL was supposed to be.
I don't know how it works. I don't know how you sustain a model like that. Now, I know that we're going to lose recruits because somebody else is going to be willing to pay them more. But name, image, and likeness is something that's here. And I think the more supporters that we have for the University of Alabama in all sports that are willing to sponsor players, whatever you want to call it, use them in your business to help your business, that's going to help our programs. The thing that I fear is at some point in time, they're just going to say we're going to have to pay players. If we start paying players, we're going to have to eliminate sports. All right, and this is all bad for college sports. I mean, we probably have, 450 people on scholarship at Alabama, whether they're women's tennis players, women's softball players, golfers, you know, baseball players, non-revenue sports that have for years and years and years been able to create a better life for themselves because they've been able to get scholarships and participate in college athletics. That's what college athletics is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be something where people come and make money. And you make a decision about where you go to school based on how much money you're going to make. You should make a decision based on where you have the best chance to develop as a person, as a student, and as a player, which is what we've always tried to major in. And we're going to continue to do that. And hopefully there's enough people out there that want to do it. But I know the consequence is going to be difficult for the people who are spending tons of money to get players.
Nick Saban is saying these comments while making an average of $10.6 million a year. Here to talk about it, John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News. He's joining us now. Are you with Team Fisher, Team Jimbo, Team Saban, or are you just getting some popcorn ready?
it is something. I mean, it's the SEC, right? And it just means more there. And this is just one example of why the SEC is the SEC and why it can command, you know, $1 billion in media revenue, you know, and a contrast to the Pac-12. I mean, this would never happen in the Pac-12 in a million years, right? But that's also because you don't have this win at all costs imperative out here. But that also is why you don't have TV ratings the way you do in the SEC. It's all part of the machinery for each conference, and it's very different machinery, and it's just fascinating to watch it unfold there.
Wilner, let me ask you, you know, Nick Saban, I think, is frustrated because he's losing recruits to other places, and he's lost to Texas A&M the last time they played. They'll play October 8th, so I guess ESPN's the big winner there. But is Saban speaking truth here? Is Jimbo speaking truth? Like, buried beneath it, I'm just wondering if they're really just saying what we're all worried about, that, hey, this thing's off the rails.
I mean, it's clearly off the rails. I mean, and it's been off the rails for several months now, right? These booster collectives really kind of got ramped up in the winter, and now they are proxies for pay-for-play, and they're being used as recruiting inducements all over the place. And you know what? I mean, there's been a lot of rumors about a lot of schools, and I would say that I am skeptical that any school is any booster collective is completely playing by the rules, and I'm skeptical that the head coaches don't know exactly what's going on. I mean, I saw Jimbo Fisher's thing was he said, you know, I don't have any contact with the boot donors. I don't know what they're doing, and I just kind of roll my eyes at that, right? I mean, of course, they all know exactly what's going on. Now, there may not be any proof, but they all know what's going on. It's going on everywhere. I mean, it's just the whole thing is dirty compared to what it's supposed to be and used to be. But is it dirty? It's not dirty in the sense that if there's no rules, you're not really breaking a rule, right?
Yeah, that's true. You know, they're both leaning into that, going, hey, we play by the rules. We play by the rules. You've got different rules in different states. You got, you know, people in California and in Washington and Oregon and Texas and Florida and Pennsylvania all looking at their own interpretation. Is federal intervention the only way we get, like, is that Jimbo's asking for it?
Well, and the Pac-12 and the SEC are asking for it, right? I mean, Greg Sankey and George Klyukov went to D.C. a few weeks ago to talk to senators about providing some kind of federal oversight. Here's the problem. If the NCAA tries to enforce rules that limit the amount of money the athletes can make in the private sector, they're going to get slapped. The NCAA is going to get slapped with an antitrust suit faster than you can say Mark Emmert. And so the only way to prevent that from happening is for Congress to provide some kind of oversight that shields the NCAA from an antitrust suit. And until that happens, it's going to be very difficult for the NCAA to enforce anything. And like you said, there's every state's got a different rule, right? I mean, there's a rule. Mississippi passed a rule recently that said you booster collectives can essentially, you know, kids can look into NIL offers the moment they commit to a school, right? You don't even have to wait for the letter of intent. They can pursue NIL the moment they provide a verbal commitment. Well, you can commit to a school when you're in fifth grade. Now they've got rules in some schools, in some states, that say athletic department personnel can be involved in negotiating the NIL deals between the players and the collectives. So it's beyond off the rail. What is off the rail? I guess off the rails is over the cliff. We're over the cliff.
We are over the cliff. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, is with us. Pac-12 did a smart thing. They are officially doing away with the format for the Pac-12 championship game. It won't be the North winner against the South winner, teams with the best two records. I like the move, and I even like it. I like it more because they didn't wait around and wait for the Big Ten to do something or the SEC. They waited, you know, they did it on their own, Wilner.
They did it on their own, and they started the process. They are the ones that sponsored the legislation in the NCAA pipeline to get this thing changed. So they were absolutely ready 6 minutes between when the NCAA announced the rule change and when the Pac-12 announced its new policy, right? I mean, I think the conference wanted to show, look, we're doing everything we can to, you know, improve the football product to the greatest extent possible, at least at the conference office, right? The conference is designed, it's supposed to be supporting the schools every way possible, and this is a perfect example. It's doing something to help the conference, to help the schools get into the playoff.
I love it. It also will put, I think, the emphasis on getting the two best teams in there. What else can the conference do? Are there other little strategy moves that they can come up with that help game the system?
Yeah, good question. I mean, a lot of football is about the schedule, right? And I think the Pac-12 has certainly done a better job the last year or two terms of not putting teams at a competitive disadvantage, there's a pretty good list of examples previous years where teams were at competitive disadvantages and it impacted their ability to compete for playoff bids. They've done a better job. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens when they're going to get rid of divisions, right? I mean, at this point, the divisions are basically just a visual, right? You look at the standings and you see a north and a south, but they're going to get rid of the divisions and they're going to get rid of the division schedule. When they come up with a new rotation, it'll be interesting to see how they handle that, because that's going to be critical for teams. Doing everything they can to support the schools with recruiting and with resources, those are the biggest things. There's going to be a big opportunity coming up with the media rights deal, right? I mean, that's the most important thing, is having the money to hire coaches and facilities and all that kind of thing. We'll see how they do coming up in the next year on the media rights.
Is there a shot that we see the conference go down to 8 conference games, or, is it more likely that they're looking on the horizon going, look, at some point the playoffs go into 8 or 12 teams, and that's a dramatic move to make? What do you do if you're George Kliavkov when it comes to the number of conference games that are being played?
I think that they're stuck. I don't think they have the option to go to 8 anymore. The way that was going to work, my understanding is they were going to go to 8 if the Big Ten did the same thing, because then the extra non-conference game created, the two conferences would just play each other. What the Pac-12 can't do is create an extra non-conference game and fill that spot with New Mexico or Eastern Washington, because the TV networks are going to say, look, you're putting out a lesser product. We want our money back, right? I mean, the contracts with ESPN and Fox are based on a certain number of conference games played every year. If there's fewer, they're going to want their money back, unless the game is as good or better. And a series against the Big Ten would be as good or better. Games against the Group of Five and FCS opponents are not good or better. So they have no choice. They have to stay at 9 at this point.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. It's interesting that, on the same day that we are talking about Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, we also have a high-profile transfer portal move, as you got Jordan Addison, the Biletnikoff Award-winning wide receiver from Pitt, who jumps in the portal and, surprise, surprise, lands at USC with Lincoln Riley. How good is this for the Pac-12 in your mind?
I think it's big. I think anything that is going to add elite talent and star power is big. I mean, SC has now added, a Heisman Trophy caliber quarterback and the number one receiver in the country, right? That just elevates USC's profile, which helps the Pac-12. We saw an example of that with SC spring game being on ESPN. I mean, a lot of schools are like, oh man, but that's good for the conference. So I think anything that's gonna help win games and get a team closer to the playoff is good for the Pac-12. And adding Addison, I mean, SC's got a heck of a wide receiver lineup now. I mean, their skill positions on offense are out of control. If they have any offensive line and defensive line play whatsoever, they are going to be a real playoff contender.
Yeah, I'm thinking about them on the defensive side of the ball now and in the trenches too. Like, I think in a 7-on-7 league, Wilner, they dominate right now if this is a 7-on-7 league. But will they be able to block and tackle? And will that be the refrain we hear all season?
Yes, it will. I think that tackling more important than blocking, right? I mean, Lincoln Riley can design an offense where the ball gets out of Caleb Williams' hands quick enough that the offensive line is not going to have to pass protect a ton. But they are going to have to be able to stop people and get more physical on their defensive front. They're going to have to play more fundamentally sound pass defense. That's been a big problem for them over the last few years. Now, they have added a couple of kids on defense that are going to help. They added a middle linebacker, Shane Lee from Alabama, who is going to be very good. They added Eric Gentry, an edge rusher from ASU, who is a super talent. So they have upgraded the defense. It's just not getting the same amount of attention as the offense, and the line and the secondary are both, I think, you know, it's reasonable to wonder about the play of their line and their secondary.
Wilner, you know, I am excited about Media Day this summer. I'm excited about the kickoff for the season. What are you most interested in learning as throughout the summer? Let's just use Media Day as the peg. What are you most interested in learning about this conference on Pac-12 Media Day in July?
Oh, good. Well, I mean, they could announce by then that they are getting rid of the divisions. You know, for this coming season, it's still possible we're going to just have one giant 12-team division and it won't be split in the North or South. You know, I'm interested in seeing some of the quarterback situations, right? I think there's seven schools off the top of my head where you could make a reasonable case. We don't know who the starting quarterback is going to be. So that'll be a big thing. We won't know that at Media Day in late July, but soon after we'll find that out. You know, and whether they come up with any other policies, right? I mean, they are considering everything. That's one thing that the change in commissioner has brought forward is a completely new set of eyes on everything they've been doing. And he certainly has got the buy-in from the athletic directors to pursue some different strategies. I mean, they even considered, you know, when they were trying to formulate the new plan for who's going to get in the football championship game, they even considered using win totals as the deciding factor. Now, the coaches were not in favor of that because, you know, that brings non-conference schedules into the mix. But that gives you an example of the range of possibilities they're looking at to help improve the football product and support the school. So they could come up with anything by the end of July. I wouldn't be surprised.
One of the things that's been floated that I caught wind of was three pods of four, meaning the four Northwest schools in one pod, the four California schools, the four mountain and desert schools, so that you retain some rivalries in there and they play each other and then you go out. Is that where you think they end up, something like that?
I think so. I mean, to me, that's the best system. And that accounts, right? You can't just have teams have one permanent opponent and that opponent being their natural rival, because then you don't have Oregon, Washington every year. And the conference needs Oregon and Washington to play every year. The other big issue with the scheduling is if the California schools insist on playing each other every year, then you have to have three permanent opponents. And if you can have three permanent opponents, the pod system is by far the best way to go. That would actually help the Northwest schools. Right now, the Northwest schools only have two opportunities to play USC and UCLA each season. If you go to the pod system, there would be six openings for the Northwest schools to play USC and UCLA. So you get more access to Southern California for recruiting, and you have more opportunities to play the LA schools at home to sell tickets against. So to me, the pod system would by far make the most sense.
All right. Now, if we had a little tiff between two sitting football head coaches, which two coaches would be the most entertaining?
Oh, okay.
Pac-12 coaches going at each other.
Give me a minute to think through.
I'm leaning Chip Kelly being one of them if it's my pick. I would go Chip Kelly, Lincoln Riley, but I don't know enough about Lincoln Riley's trash talk game right now. But who do you got?
Just thinking through. I mean, there's so many coaches in the Pac-12 that are kind of just, you know, no nonsense.
Yep.
You know, low profile, which is good and bad, I think. You know, I mean, we could have, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, David Shaw was pretty public in his criticism of ASU recruiting methods already. That's like, that was as far out on a limb as you ever see one Pac-12 coach go with another Pac-12 coach is being critical, Shaw being critical of ASU's recruiting. You know, Chip would be interesting. Gosh, I'm trying to think.
Because Whittingham is Whittingham's all not. He's no nonsense. DeBoer's not going to talk trash. Dickert's not going to say anything. Jonathan Smith's not going to say anything. Like, you know, Dan Lanning's going to keep his head down right now. He's too new. And so maybe Herm.
I mean, there's.
How about Herm?
Nobody.
How about Herm?
Herm. I mean, the thing is, Herm, I don't think is going to. talk trash about another coach, but the way Herm's program is going, he seems subject to criticism from others with the recruiting methods that they reportedly used. But you're right. I mean, that's the Pac-12. It's very gentlemanly. And there's a lot to be said for being gentlemanly, but there's also a lot to be said for having this national brouhaha that's going to jack up your TV ratings and ticket sales.
Yeah, I kind of think Mike Leach, Mario Cristobal from yesteryear would have been a good one.
Leach, you know, I mean, well, Leach and Jimmy Lake had a little thing going, you know, because Lake was pretty critical about the air raid. So, I mean, Leach took, there's no question that when Leach left, some of the personality and flavor left. I think then Cristobal leaving, you know, there's an obvious target for other coaches. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty bland at this point. And Lincoln Riley has become kind of a, you know, the bad guy nationally. I think that's fine for SC. Unless Lincoln Riley does something tangible to embarrass the school or violate NCAA rules, it's actually probably good for the Pac-12 that he's a little bit of the bad guy, right? I mean, it helps get attention.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News. Follow him on Twitter, at Wilner Hotline. Read him at the San Jose Mercury News and other places across the Pac-12 footprint. Wilner, I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, my friend.
There he goes, John Wilner. I think Mike Leach has been very quiet today. I'm going to text him and ask him, Team Jimbo or Team Saban? Let's see what he says. Anna's coming up next. Plus, later in the show, Scott Lakem, the University of Portland Athletic Director, will be joining us. You got the bald-faced truth.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Anna's in the studio. Everybody on their best behavior. No, Anna's in the studio. Anna,
hey now.
What? Hey, so Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, has issued a statement. Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban fighting today. The commissioner of the SEC is saying what?
Well, there are reprimands that are coming out. Membership of the Southeastern Conference has established expectations for conduct and sportsmanship, Sankey said, that were not met last night nor today. A hallmark of the SEC is intense competition within an environment of collaboration. Yeah. Public criticism of any kind does not resolve issues and creates a distraction from seeking solutions for the issues facing college athletics today. SEC formally reprimanding Saban for comments that he made.
But there's no fine. There's no teeth to it.
Fisher also earned a penalty.
And a reprimand. That's nothing. That's like
slap
a parent.
On the wrist.
That's a parent going, hey, knock that off or I'm going to come in the room. Like, you know, yelling in the other room. You guys, you don't know what's going to happen if I have to pull over here. You know,
these are
idle threats.
They have violated bylaws 10.23 related to ethical conduct for derogatory comments.
You know, I said that the other day in the car. I told the two daughters, you know, the 6-year-old and the 7-year-old now. I said to them, you know, if you can't say something nice about each other, nobody talk. We ended up, the position we ended up in is nobody talked.
Yeah, that it was a quiet car ride.
That was the position we ended up in. Why does it mean more in the SEC? Why do the coaches in the Pac-12, they're all just so gentlemanly with each other? I was talking to Wilner about that. Why do you think, it would be better if the Pac-12 coaches were fighting? Chip Kelly was, you know, chipping at, you know, Jonathan Smith, and Jonathan Smith was barking at Dan Lanning, and Kalen DeBoer was yelling at Lincoln Riley. Like, none of these things are happening in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that would be better. I think it does actually create a distraction from the program itself, and it's not helpful. But I understand. I mean, we're in the Wild West right now with NIL, the amount of money that is being poured, you know, out of boosters' pockets to try and buy the best team. Like, I get it. Like, I think everybody gets it. That there's a frustration level, and it's a weird world that we're living in.
I think it's totally weird. And I also think that, you know, the SEC fans are eating it up. But here's the thing, ESPN and ABC are going to have that game on October 8th. Texas A&M's going to play Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what date it is.
Yeah.
Why? Because these two coaches were acting like Conor McGregor and Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen, like in a pay-per-view fight promotional video. Like, you know, they're just barking at each other, talking trash. And in the end, we all want to see him play now.
Do you think it's orchestrated?
No.
Okay.
I think Saban doesn't like it because he's not in the position of power that he has traditionally been in.
Uh-huh.
He's losing, the ground is shifting underneath him.
Yeah.
And Jimbo just didn't like getting attacked.
Okay.
So I think that was at the crux of it. But it all comes back to the SEC fan base, right? Like, you know, we have that call we play all the time on the show from that crazy Bama fan who calls into the radio show and goes off about, you know, how, you know, Alabama's going to be back and Roll Tide and all that. It's just a different kind of fan, unhinged fan, an unhinged mentality in the South.
Hey, Cal Turd, you are just, I don't even have a name for you anymore, except Cal Turd. How dare you say that about Alabama? They lose a game. They lose a game, and they lost it to a good team. The team beat Alabama. But how can you say, after the dynasty took all these years, all these decades, one game is going to mean that Saban's dynasty is over? You're out of your freaking mind, Cal Turd. You need to go back to whatever the hell you was doing before you got on the radio. And how dare you call me out? You call me out, you're going to get me back. You hear me, you punk? How dare you? I don't understand the way you act towards... It's Bama. That's what it is. It's Bama. You don't hate any team in this nation except for Bama. And you know why? Because they're better than what you've got. Nick Saban is a better man than you are. You could never coach because you don't have a bit of coaching in your body. You have nothing but to sit there and insult and down and just carry on about everybody that's doing something different than you. You're jealous. That's the bottom line. You're jealous. And Bama's coming back. Bama has not lost. The dynasty is not over. Do you hear me, Cal Turd? Bama's dynasty has just begun. Kiss my butt. Roll Tide.
Boom. Like, that's not a Pac-12 mentality. Why? What's the difference, Anna? Is it geography? You know, what is it? Is it the food?
I don't know, but I'm having palpitations just listening to that. It makes me so uncomfortable. Oh.
See, that's what I'm talking about, though, yeah. You know, in the SEC country.
How dare you? I don't understand the way you act towards it's Bama. That's what it is. It's Bama.
It's Bama.
That's not healthy. That's not healthy.
You have nothing but to sit there and insult and down and just carry on about everybody that's doing.
But we don't get the Pac-12 fans are not that way. They're not unhinged, and I'm not complaining. But help me understand why. What is it? Humidity? The food? What is it?
Well, I think we've talked about how there's so much more legacy, you know, with those teams in the South. They've been around for longer. They've enjoyed success and victory for longer. Weren't we just having a conversation, not about the coaches, but we were talking about the fans and how, in large part, that caller may not represent a large swath of the typical SEC fan that comes that unhinged. Like, you were talking about...
I think they do. I actually think... But I don't think they're all like that, but I think you have a higher frequency.
Kiss my butt!
You got a higher frequency of the unhinged fan in the SEC.
Roll Tide!
Oh, my gosh. You have to stop playing that.
I want you to tell us.
Chest pains.
You're a listener. You know. You tell us. What's the difference? Why are the SEC fans, why does it mean more down there? Why does it mean more to the coaches? Why are they going after each other? Would the Pac-12 be better off if we had more nutty buddies in the fan base and more coaches willing to call each other out? 503-417-7575.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.